Blog Talk Radio. Okay, welcome everybody. Apparently I'm having a lot of technical difficulties tonight. This is whole show has not gone as planned, so I'm going to start off by talking and hopefully things will get straight as we go along. I haven't been able to upload everything I wanted to upload. I just tried hitting the button to get the song to play and the song wouldn't play. I had to refresh my browser a second ago and I don't know if that's part of it or not. However, needless to say, that's just all part of the Mercury retrograde, which is our topic tonight, astrology. So anyway, let me move on here with my little intro that I normally do. Tonight's show will be on astrology. It will be in multiple parts. This is a special edition. I may do more. Depends on how things go tonight. Things may not go as I wanted them to because I did not have enough time to get all the clips loaded that I wanted. So anyway, for the record, today is March 5th, 2013 on our screwed up Christian calendar. The sun is at 14 degrees Pisces today. I will not monitor the chat. I may glance at it during music breaks. We'll see. Depends on whether or not I have any other issues to deal with. And as usual, I'll be drinking my water and smoking where I'm sitting. So that will cause the usual momentary pauses at times. We have a chat room. It's at renegadebroadcasting.com, and there should be a live feed there tonight. The other chat room is renegadebroadcasting.chitango.com, and over on the alternativesocial.com social network, there's a chat there. And again, I want to remind people of this website, www.nationalprotectionism.com. Again, I don't have a personal website or blog. Again, I say that loosely. And I may not have, wouldn't have a life, probably, if I did have one. No phone calls tonight. Way too much material to cover, as usual. However, we'll see how things go. If you would like to contact me, you can email me at magus_18@geocities.com. That's magus_18@geocities.com. If you want to be on my email list, just send me an email that says subscribe. Or if you want, just write me. And again, I can't always guarantee I can get back with you. The cat seems to be improving slightly, but still not 100%. It's a slow go. So she will not be with me tonight. She is in the other room. Now, I was informed that quantum astrology was removed from YouTube. I hope most of you got a chance to watch it first. However, there is another link for it that I will post in the chat room in just a second, and I have not verified this link. It was posted in the chat earlier today. I'm going to go ahead and copy that right now, and if things go right here, I will see if I can get to the right web page to post this into the chat. Maybe somebody else there can do it otherwise, but let's see here. Let me tab. Okay, just par for the course here tonight. Okay, there we go. Now let me scroll down. There we go. Why was it removed? Probably copyright. Hooting eggplant. Now let me get back to my studio screen. And then back to my show notes. Okay, let me see about getting this song to play, because it's part of what I wanted to do as an intro. There we go.
Time to every purpose. Undo.
Okay, I'm back. I'm sure many of you have heard that song. That's an old song by the Byrds. The lyrics came right out of the Bible. The Bible is an interesting book. There's a lot of things about it that are not so great, obviously, if you've listened to any of our shows, and in particular mine. But there are things about it that do have some interest. And I've mentioned before, if you've followed any of my presentations, regardless of whose show it was on, that you will know that the Bible can be read on multiple levels. And not everything in it is bad, obviously, and it's a corruption. However, what I find interesting in particular is a book called Ecclesiastes. And conventional wisdom says this was written by Solomon. And some will say, okay, well, this is written by someone named Ecclesiastes. Well, my guess is that this is some sort of an Egyptian book, although it could be perhaps Persian. I don't know. It's hard to say. However, I thought I would go ahead and read through some of those lyrics. For everything, there is a season, and a time for every matter under heaven. A time to be born and a time to die. A time to plant and a time to pluck up what is planted. A time to kill and a time to heal. A time to break down and a time to build up. A time to weep and a time to laugh. A time to mourn and a time to dance. A time to cast away stones and a time to gather stones together. A time to embrace. A time to refrain from embracing. A time to seek, a time to lose, a time to keep, and a time to cast away, a time to rend, a time to sow, a time to keep silence, and a time to speak, and a time to love, a time to hate, a time for war, and a time for peace. And that was Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verses 1 through 8. Now, most people, when they read that, don't make the connection. What that's talking about exactly is what astrology is, because there is a time for everything under heaven. Now, what is heaven? Well, heaven is the zodiac itself. The zodiac is a word that means belt of animals, and there's what's called the ecliptic. And it goes around the Earth approximately at the equator as the Earth goes around the Sun. The Earth is, of course, tilted. And so this point will vary up and down, going north and south, as the Earth goes around the Sun due to the angle of the Earth's tilt. Now, the ecliptic generally runs from what is known as the Tropic of Cancer to the equator, from the equator to the Tropic of Capricorn. And it's approximately 23.5 degrees. The Earth's tilt, rather, is 23.5 degrees. And that's what most people call it, just to round it off, from a vertical axis in direct relation to the Sun's position to the Sun, Earth's position to the Sun, excuse me. In reality, it's closer to 23.4 degrees. Now, if you subtract 23.4 degrees from 90 degrees, that leaves 66.6 degrees. And that angle will also lead you to a star called Draco. Now, there's another belt that goes around the planet, and that is essentially the houses. That's essentially departments of life. Now, most people may or may not have seen an astrology chart. I had hoped to get one up, but it didn't work out. Let me explain what happened here today. Actually, it began yesterday. My email address had been compromised, and I spent probably 3 hours trying to get it all straightened back up again. And apparently, there's still some issue as to me sending emails and people receiving what I send. And I had sent Kyle yesterday what I needed posted for the show, and apparently he did not get it, and we had to communicate through Skype at the last minute what to do, and some of the pictures I wanted up did not make it, and I just grabbed whatever I could that looked good. So, unfortunately, I do not have an example of an astrology chart posted for you to look at. I had one of the Federal Reserve, which I thought would be a great example to deal with. Of course, you wouldn't be able to look at it at any real size anyway. However, over on Blog Talk Radio, if you put your mouse cursor over the image that is being displayed of the rotating images, you can get it to stand still. Essentially, a chart in general is like a pie chart. It's divided into 12 slices. Not all of the slices are equal, because some of the slices are going to vary depending upon when the chart was cast and where you are on the planet. And so they will vary in size. Now, there's different methods of house systems. But anyway, a house is essentially a department of life. And you can kind of break those down into 12 parts. And you can almost categorize everything into one of those 12 parts. Now, I'm going to go through these 12 parts right here real quickly and just give you a brief example of what they are. The first house is the probably the most important point in your chart. It is the house of self. It is you. It is your outer body. It is what you look like. It is how you present yourself to the world. And it is your image, your self-image that you project. It's how other people see you. The second house is your house of values, and it's also the house of money. Now, some astrologers do not want to attribute that to it, but it is, from best I can tell. And when I say money, it's money that you earn, not money from other sources, and I will clarify that in just a second. The third house has to do a lot with mainly communications, also your immediate environment, and also your neighbors. Additionally, it also has to do with short-distance travel. And I'll make that distinction again with long-distance travel in just a second. Now, the fourth house is at the bottom of the chart. Let's pretend you got a pizza and you're dividing it into 12 pieces. And the 9 o'clock will be your first house. 8 o'clock will be your second house. 7 o'clock will be your third house. And so 6 o'clock will be your fourth house. Okay, we get the picture. We're going counterclockwise in motion with the numbering system of the houses and the signs. So your fourth house is at the very bottom. It's called the nadir. It has a Latin term that's hard for me to pronounce. The abbreviation for it is the IC, so I will not attempt to even bother to pronounce it. I just call it the nadir. And that house is the fourth, which represents your home. And it also represents how you handle all of your domestic affairs. It is also the house that you live in specifically. And, of course, now if you're out on the road and you're living in some rent RV, something like that, well, then that, if you're homeless, that is your home. Now, the fifth house is really the house of the sun. And I'll go through this. Just one second here. Looks like someone's calling in. I guess they're probably wanting to just listen. Again, I'm not taking calls, so if you're trying to call in, please go ahead and hang up. Now, if you're listening, you can hang on. Okay, the fifth house has to do with this. Basically, it's the sun house. It's also the house of children. Any children that you have will relate to that house. And it will also be how you relate to those children. And it can determine whether you have children or not. But it is also where you seek fun and pleasure in life. It also has to do with romantic affairs, albeit not necessarily marriage itself. However, if you are married, then there is still, and it is still applicable. Now, the sixth house is the house of work. That describes the working conditions that your job is. It is also the house of health. Now, if you stop and think about it, why would it be related to work and health? Well, what you do for a living usually affects your health. And so, therefore, that's the correlation. Now, again, I mentioned the first house was about the physical body. Well, the sixth house gives the description of the nature of the body. And if you have any illnesses, well, then that will be determined sometimes by what is going on in the sixth house. Now, also, too, another item that is covered by the sixth house is your pets. So, any of your dog, your cat, your bird, your fish, whatever it is that is your pet. Now, we get back around to the seventh house, and we find ourselves in opposition to the first house. Now, we finally have reached a point where we're no longer dealing with mainly just personal issues. We're starting to deal with outer issues. And when I say outer, that means other. The lower part of the chart has to deal a lot with the inner self. The upper half of the chart has to deal with how you relate to society. Seventh house is the house of marriage and partnerships. That house will indicate how it is you deal with other people, that whether it be your boss, your business associate, your marriage partner, or even your close friends. And in a certain way, there's another house that relates to friends as well, but in a slightly different manner. So anyway, this house is the first house that actually opposes one of the lower houses. So it opposes your first house. Now, the seventh house cusp, being opposite the first, is also a very important point in the astrological chart. And I'll cover these again in just a second. Now, the eighth house, this is a very misunderstood house. And it correlates to Scorpio. And I'll go back and attribute the signs to each one of these houses in just a second. But the Scorpio house has to do with death and transformation. It can also deal with simply death. Now, usually when people experience death, they're not experiencing death themselves. They're experiencing the death of other people. And, of course, however, it can indicate your death. And I will say this, death is one of the hardest things to try to attempt to predict in the astrological chart. This also has to do with insurance, any sort of money coming from other people. And this, again, is the opposed to the second house, where in the second house, it's money you generate. In the eighth house, this is money that comes from others. So this also would apply to any type of thing that you would have that would bring in money. Okay, now the ninth house, we're starting to approach the top of the chart. Let me light this cigarette here. I can get the lighter to do what it's supposed to do. Par for the course this evening. The ninth house is a house of higher education. I failed to mention one thing about the third house, which is opposite the ninth. The third house is your primary education, say grades kindergarten through 12. Okay, the opposite is the ninth. Ninth is your higher education, and it's also the house of philosophy and religion, and also long distance travel, opposed to the third house of short distance travel. So this is a house where you meet people from other countries, or you travel to other countries. If there's indication of a possible relationship with, say, someone from another country, well, then this would be also indicated in this house. It also has to deal with legal issues. You have to go to court. Now, sometimes, too, the seventh house does as well. And that's because the seventh house represents your opponent. So if you get involved in something legally, it's usually a ninth house, seventh house issue. The seventh house will always indicate your opponent. The ninth house is going to indicate the nature of what's going on legally. Now we get to the tenth house. The tenth house is the second most important point in the chart. It is at the top of the chart, and is usually referred to as the midheaven. And the reason being is it correlates to 12 noon. That's the sun at noon, the highest point in the sky. And if you're in the northern hemisphere and you were to lay this chart down onto the Earth, look at it, you would see that it points to the North Pole. Now, the 10th house mainly is public standing. And that covers just a whole assortment of things. That can be in your career. That can be your public image. Let's say you do something that generates something newsworthy, and you wind up appearing on the news media in some form, shape, or form. Let's say you do something good, and hey, the news decides to report it. Well, there you go. That's what that is involved. Now, let me give you one example of how that can come into play. I'm just going to put off the rest of the houses for just a second and show you what I mean by what I just said. Now, if most of you remember Richard Nixon, or if he was before your time, you still know who he is. Well, Richard Nixon was brought down when Saturn transited his 10th house. Now, there were certain elements that were involved that helped bring him down, and they were not necessarily all of his own doings, and that's sort of another subject. But it indicates to you that if you do something that can catch up to you later on, then if it's going to catch up to you, this is when it will come out into the public for all to see. And I really hate using Mr. Nixon for this example, because he was sort of a victim of circumstance. But most astrologers will tell you about Nixon when they try to explain what I just did. So I'm just going along with what a lot of the other astrologers did. When you get to the top of the chart, you are at the midheaven, and then you move down, going back towards the first, and the following house is the 11th house. The 11th house is where you set your goals and ideas and dreams and wishes and hopes for your future. It also has to deal with groups. And that's what I meant earlier when I was talking about the 7th house, about your friends. Well, your friends also fall into the 11th house, but as a group, whereas individually they fall into the 7th house. Now, a lot of times, if you have a planet that is transiting your chart slowly, such as, say, Saturn, and it gets up to the top of your chart, when it hits the 10th house, there's sort of a blend between the 10th and 11th house. It's sort of blurred. And so it's almost like a five-year period of everything is just all kind of thrown together, good or bad. And so we get down to the 12th house, and this is the final house. And this is the house of confinement, the house of self-undoing, the house of confusion. And this correlates to Pisces. And it has a lot to do with a lot of things that are mystical, the occult. There's all sorts of offshoots of those subjects that I just mentioned that could apply to that. Now, I went through the houses first for a reason, because it sort of gives you an idea of what you're looking at when you're looking at an astrology chart. And each one of these houses, again, are a department of life. And the planets themselves are really your personal, what's the best word to use here? They sort of represent you and different aspects of you. For example, your sun sign, where your sun is in your chart, represents you, your individual self, you. Now, this is not to be confused with the first house. However, while we're on this topic, I will go ahead and mention that what usually happens in life is you go through the cycle of aging. You know, you start out being born and you're young. Typically, the moon rules your life, and then you get to be a young adult, and the sun still does not yet rule your life. You still are not quite grown into what your sun sign actually is. So your first house typically controls that part of your life. And then when you get to be about 30 or a little beyond that, you actually grow into your sun sign. So anyway, Let me get on with the planets. Now, the planets themselves are actually in reality going around the sun. But when you're looking at a chart, its perspective is from the Earth. And so when you look at somebody's chart and you see, say, they have sun in Libra, that means that from the Earth's view, the sun is in Libra. Now, if you were on the sun looking towards the Earth, then you would be looking at the opposite sign from the sun, and that would be Aries. So you have to view all of the planets from where we are in the universe, which is our Earth. So if you take any chart as an example, you look at all of the planets, where they're located, and you see that they're all located in some sign, one of the 12 zodiac signs. Now, each one of these zodiac signs kind of correlates to the houses. So, before we actually go further into the planets, let me go ahead and make that association. Each one of the houses has a correlation to one of the planets. Now, there's not enough planets to actually be able to cover all of the houses. We do not have 12 planets, unless, of course, you're reading Zechariah Sitchin's books. So, the first house is typically ruled by Aries. And so Aries is ruled by Mars. The second house is ruled by Taurus. Taurus is ruled by Venus. The third house is the Gemini house. And the symbol for that is the twins. And that is ruled by Mercury. The fourth house is the Cancer house. That is ruled by the moon. The fifth house is ruled by Leo. And that is ruled by the sun. The sixth house is ruled by Virgo. And Virgo is also ruled by Mercury. So if you'll notice, we have Mercury actually rules two different signs. And I'll get into that in just a second. And you move to the seventh house, and that is the Libra house. And Libra is also ruled by Venus, which is shared with Taurus. The eighth house is the Scorpio house. Now, in traditional astrology, that was ruled by Mars, but after the discovery of the outer planets, it has been assigned to Pluto. And I'll quickly say something on Pluto here. Pluto was declassified from a planet by the astronomers here recently, and it was classified as a planetoid, not a planet. But I will say this. Pluto is the most powerful planet in our solar system, bar none. Saturn is second. Now, the ninth house is the Sagittarius house, and that's ruled by Jupiter. The tenth house is the Capricorn house, and that is ruled by Saturn. The 11th house is the Aquarius house, and in traditional astrology, Aquarius was also ruled by Saturn. But Aquarius has now been assigned Uranus. Now, of note, Uranus is the only planet in the solar system that has a Greek name. All the rest are Roman. Now, the 12th house is Pisces, the Pisces house. And that Pisces house, again, as I mentioned before, has to do with confinement and things of confusion. And its corresponding planet is Neptune. And if you look at Neptune, some photos of it, it almost looks like the planet is just total water. However, supposedly it's gas. But I don't know. It's hard to say. It kind of fits the sign, actually. So anyhow, we're starting to get a little picture here on how these things correlate. Now, what I'm going to do next is I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to play another song because I need to take a restroom break. So, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to resume where I was at, but I'm going to interject something before we get to where I'm leaving off because of the nature of the song that I'm fixing to play, and you will know when the song is over. Well, if I can get it to go, Having a real problem with these buttons here. There we go. Probably guess that was the Rolling Stones. The song is called The Hand of Fate. Now, since I had to go to the restroom and play that song, like I said, I'm going to explain something related to that, and then I'll resume where I was at. Hopefully I'll know where I left off. I think I'll remember. So anyway, this song, The Hand of Fate, let me tell you a story here. And this is a local story, and it was in the newspapers, and it was pretty prominent at the time. This happened sometime in the mid to late 90s here locally. An illegal alien had been arrested for committing had to be a murder because of the punishment that they had received, which was they had received the death sentence, and that's the only thing that I believe warrants a death sentence in Texas. And as most of you know, we like to put people to death here for committing these bad crimes. We put more people to death here than I think than any other state, probably almost twice to the next state. And it's all done with lethal injection. And during the course of the 1990s, a lot of technology had occurred regarding genetics, and DNA and evidence was introduced. Research on DNA was introduced into the field of crime. And an illegal alien had received a death sentence and was on death row, awaiting their sentence. And during this time, something was brought up that caused reinvestigation into a lot of murder cases that were on file here down at the Houston Police Department. And this particular illegal alien's case came up, and come to find out that this man had been wrongly convicted. And this is actually, you know, some of the few times that anything ever actually happens to these illegal aliens in our country. They tend to get away with murder, except in reality, no, they don't usually get away with murder unless they run back to Mexico. But in this instance, this guy was caught, and he was tried and convicted. And he had a scheduled date for his lethal injection. Well, after the research was done on his case, it was determined, again, like I said, he was wrongly convicted, and he was let go. After he was let go, he went back home to Mexico. And this all came up right before he was scheduled to die. So he had been in jail for most of the time, and it was like right before he was ready to be put to death that they did this research into his case. And so when he was in Mexico, he was celebrating, and he had been drinking and smoking some weed and all that good stuff, and was riding around. And he was killed in a car accident when he was in celebrating his newfound freedom. Well, let me put it to you this way. Take a guess at what day it was that he actually died on. He died on the same day that he was scheduled to have been put to death on death row in Texas. So there you have it, the hand of fate. That man was scheduled to die on that particular day, no matter what. Now, that's a pretty rare story. You don't hear many stories like that. But anyway, that was my point of playing that song. And a lot of people think that astrology in general is fatalistic. And in the past, it's been treated that way. Over time, it's become a sort of it's been viewed differently. And because we do have free will, and not everything is fate. However, the energies that are brought into your life as a result of your birth chart are, as typically, fatalistic. And there are some things that you cannot control, things that happen to people around you. Let's say when your parents die, there's no way you can change that. When they are scheduled to die is when they are scheduled to die. And I'm going to go ahead and discuss a little bit on death, my thoughts on it anyway. A lot of people will try to determine someone's death by using astrology, and again, as I mentioned before, that is one of the hardest things to determine, and usually it's only worked out through retrospect, and one has to actually do a lot of research into someone's chart to see how it all came about. And the point about death is this, in my view, is that there are multiple times in your life when the possibility of your death could occur. Now, how you go about handling those circumstances may or may not determine whether you move on and through your chart until the next time comes around when you have the potential to die. And that may be different for everybody as to how many times that there's a possibility you could die in your life. And, of course, the older you get, sooner or later, it's going to catch up with you. So anyway, I just wanted to tell you that story because I thought it was rather interesting, and it's also brought up the issue of free will versus fate, and that is very important in the discussion of this. In the past, you know, medieval times, everything was viewed with a doom and gloom attitude, and you had no control, and it was almost Calvinish in that sense. And if you know anything about Calvinism, well, then you know what I'm talking about. So let me light this cigarette that keeps going out here. And by the way, I don't actually smoke cigarettes. I smoke filtered cigars. They're a lot cheaper than cigarettes. After they keep raising the taxes on them to the point where they're just ridiculous, I just said, screw this. I'm buying $2 packs of cigars because the taxes do not apply to the cigars. So anyway, there you have it. That explains everything when you hear me talking about smoking. Now, let's see, where was I at? I was going through the planet correlations and to the houses and to the signs. Well, back to the houses for just a second. You can take your chart, and as I mentioned to you before, you have a horizontal line going from the first house to the seventh. And then you have a vertical line going from the 10th house down to the 4th. Okay, so you have four quadrants. Okay, and in each quadrant you have three signs or three houses. Now, this division of four correlates to the four seasons. Spring, summer, autumn, winter. And that is typically the way life is. And so astrology is ultimately that same sense. You start off, you know, spring. You're born, then summer, you bloom, and then fall, you wither, and then winter, you die. And everything ultimately correlates to the seasons in more than one way. There's multiple ways of doing the looking at the zodiac. There's what's called the sidereal and then the tropical. And the sidereal is the actual zodiac itself as viewed from the Earth. However, over time, due to what is called precession, the Earth does what is known as a wobble. It has a wobble effect. And so it actually, the view from the sky changes due to this wobble, and it shifts the view approximately 1 degree every 72 years. And so the sky actually shifts. Well, at that point then, people are no longer born under the appropriate sign and do no longer fit the descriptions of their signs. So what this actually means is that it has more to do with the fact that you are on the Earth than it does anything to do with the sky, because it has to do with the seasons. And if you have to view everything from the aspect of the seasons, so when the seasons, the way the seasons work, spring comes in with force, and then it's stable, and then it withers, and then in comes summer with force, and then it remains stable, and then it withers. And so forth. And so that's three different modes. And each one of these modes are called cardinal. And then the other one is called fixed. And the last one is called mutable. Now, cardinal, again, comes in with force. Fixed means stable. And mutable means exactly that. It withers. And so that is where you can use this correlation to all of the signs of the zodiac as well as the houses. So, for example, you have four quadrants and you have three signs in each quadrant. That's four seasons, okay? And so each quadrant is got a sign that is correlated to a cardinal, which is force, and then one that is fixed, which would be the middle sign in each quadrant, and then the last sign of each quadrant would be the sign that withers, or the mutable. So you have cardinal, fixed, mutable. So the first quadrant, first, second, third, you have cardinal house is first, then a fixed house is second, then a mutable house is third. And then it starts over again. Fourth house is cardinal. The fifth house is mutable. And the sixth is fixed. And the sixth house is mutable. The seventh house is cardinal. The eighth house is fixed. And the ninth house is mutable. And then the tenth, the same thing. The 10th is cardinal, the 11th is fixed, and the 12th is mutable. So that applies not only to the houses, but also to the signs. So let's say, for example, you are a Taurus, Well, then that's the second house. That's in the middle of the first quadrant. So you are essentially a fixed sign in nature, which mimics the middle of the seasons. Okay? So that just gives you one example of how that works. Now, another thing that you can do that needs to be looked at, and this is where the occult starts coming into play. Each one of your houses has a correlation of positive, negative, or male and female. And you start at house one as positive, and then you alternate between positive and negative, and you go through the zodiac or the houses in the same manner. So the first house is positive, the second house is negative, third is positive, fourth is negative, fifth is positive, and so on. Okay? And then ultimately, when it gets down to it, and you start putting these pieces together, and I don't expect anybody to just be able to start putting this together simply because of what I just told you, you can actually start correlating everything else to the occult, to the astrological symbolism involved as well, whether it be numbers, numerology, or the tarot, etc., just on down the line. Now, I can't say yet for sure that I've been able to associate gematria to this, but I'm sure someone might be able to figure that out at some point. And, of course, if you correlate the number aspect to it, then maybe you can. Let me take a drink here for just a second. So let me mute this while I swallow this. Hold on. I'm drinking some orange juice right out of the jug right now. So I just decided to drink something in addition to my water. All right. So anyway, let's go ahead and get back to the planets here. And it looks like we've got about an hour and 10 minutes left. The planets. Now, the planets correlate more on a personal level to you, as I said before. Now, the order of the planets, and I don't want to get into too much astronomy. Astronomy is important, but you don't have to be an astronomer to fully understand astrology. You just have to know some basics. But for example, you start in the middle with the sun. The next planet would be Mercury. Then after that is Venus, and then the Earth. Now, in astrology, the moon, because it is so close to us, it's considered a planet. And then after that, you have Mars. And then what appears to have been at one time a planet, which is the asteroid belt. Now, that is not designated in astrology. Perhaps at one time that it was. And let me interject something here. Astrology would work wherever you're at in the universe, but everything would be determined by your local universe or wherever you're at. Now, one thing I ain't figured out yet is what happens if you're an astronaut. So anyway, back to the order of the planets. So you have Mars, then what was once possibly a planet called the asteroid belt. Then you have Jupiter, Saturn, and then after Saturn, you have a little planetoid that is commonly called Chiron. Some people say Chiron. I typically like to say Chiron, but it's probably called Chiron. And then you have Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto. And when you get to the outer planets, well, actually, I think it's all of them. Each planet outward, as you leave from the sun, the distance from one planet to the next is double of the previous distance. So let me give you an example. Uranus is twice the distance from the sun as Saturn is. Saturn is twice the distance from the sun as Jupiter. Jupiter is approximately twice the distance as Mars, and so on. So that gives you roughly an idea. Now, Pluto is the exception because it has a very erratic orbit. Now, each one of these planets, the inner planets is what they're called that I'm fixing to talk about, is the Sun to Mars. And actually, I like to personally consider Jupiter a personal planet as well because of its orbit. These are planets have very fast orbits around the Sun, and so they correlate more to you personally and your day-to-day events than the outer planets do. But when the outer planets have an effect on you, you certainly know about it. And for example, it takes Jupiter 12 years to go around the sun. And so your Jupiter cycle in astrology is every 12 years. So when you're born, Jupiter is at a particular point in your chart. And then as life goes on, 12 years go by, it makes a return to where it was. And so you've had a Jupiter return. And that's actually about 11.8 years. And Mars is approximately 1.8 years with retrograde. It varies a little bit. The Earth, you would not consider, as we know, it takes 1 year. And unless you're on another planet, Earth would really have no significance. Now, I'll leave the moon for a little bit later because it goes around the sun, rather, it goes around the Earth, excuse me, approximately every 29 and a half days. And, of course, Venus, that cycle is, I don't remember exactly what Venus is, but I think Mercury is something like 88 days. It's real fast. Now, since the inner planets that are within the orbit of the sun are Mercury and Venus, wherever the sun is in your chart, Mercury and Venus are never more than 45 degrees away from the sun. So wherever your sun is in your chart, and the sun represents your individuality, and I'll get to that in just a second. Your Venus and Mercury are very personal as a result. They never tend to leave the range of that 45 degrees. So, you know, as the sun goes around these 12 houses and through your chart, you've always got Mercury and Venus tagging along with it. And I'll go ahead and mention some of the other times for the other planets. Saturn takes 29 and a half years approximately to go around the sun. And that is typically called the when it makes its return, it's called the Saturn return. And typically you get one of these at 29 and a half, and then approximately, you know, between 56 and 58, depending upon the retrograde cycle. And then if you live long enough, you'll have another one at a later point. I need to cough. Hold on just one sec. And then after Saturn, you have Neptune. And then after, I'm sorry, Uranus, rather, excuse me. Uranus takes 84 years to go around your chart, and most people don't even actually live 84 years. Many women do, and some men do, but if you've made a one trip of Uranus, you almost have sort of a rebirth in life, even though you're old. It's kind of hard to explain. And then Neptune takes, I think, if I remember correctly, 154 years to go around the sun, and then Pluto takes 248 years. So no one will ever live long enough to see a Neptune return or a Pluto return. And typically those only apply to things that you would do a chart for that are inanimate, such as in political astrology, and there are multiple versions of astrology. Let's say you're the chart of the United States. Well, the chart of the United States, technically it's considered approximately 1776. I'm not going to go into the details of that. So when the United States becomes 248 years old, it will have a Pluto return. So you get the point. And by the way, you can do a chart for anything that has a beginning and end. If you start a new job, well, then you will you can do a chart at the timing of the time that you get your new job. And there's a lot of things, again, that you can do a chart for. I could do a chart for the time that I began doing this show. And believe me, it would follow the course of that chart. I could also do a chart on when I bought my vehicle, of all things. And you would think, well, why would that apply? It's an inanimate object. It has no life. It doesn't matter. And it doesn't mean that the vehicle itself necessarily changes, although when it breaks down, it does. But it's certainly not an organic life form. But nevertheless, back to the planets. You can again correlate the planets to the houses of the zodiac. And by the way, zodiac means belt of animals. I don't think I explained that properly. Again, this show is going to be kind of helter skelter here because I had some other things planned, and I'll explain that in a minute as well. The sun is yourself. That is your individuality. That is what makes you you. Mercury has to do with things that are related to communication. And so when it goes retrograde, communication and all sorts of things just get disrupted. Things run late. Things just go haywire, don't work right, scheduling is always off, et cetera, et cetera. Venus has to do a lot with your relationships with other people. And Mars is your action, your activity. And since Mars has got a cycle of approximately 1.8 years, it begins new cycles of things that warrant activity. And let's say, for example, you're going to start a new job. Well, if you've been looking for a job and your Mars is fixing to approach the point where it was when you were born, and you've been looking diligently, you will probably start or get a job around the time that your Mars return occurs without fail, as long as you are at least making an effort. And then after Mars is Jupiter. Well, Jupiter has to do with philosophy and in particular expansion. Jupiter, along with Venus, tend to be considered benefic planets, and there are planets that are considered malefic. And that doesn't necessarily mean good or bad, but, you know, a lot of people want to view it that way. Most people think everything to do with Jupiter is just all hunky-dory. Well, that's not necessarily the case, and I'll give you an example. There's this old saying that that if you want something bad enough, well, Jupiter will write the check, but Saturn has to sign it, okay? And a lot of times that's true. But let me give you an example about Jupiter. Well, anything that is expansive is not necessarily better. More is not better. You know, obviously, if you eat too much food, that is not better. If you have a tendency to do drugs or drink, and Jupiter causes expansion, well, no, that's not necessarily good. So I have seen more problems with Jupiter than you can shake a stick at, even though everybody wants to holler about it being a good planet. Venus is considered good because of money and relationships. Saturn is your taskmaker. Saturn is gonna kick your ass wherever it's at in your chart. However, there are times where it can provide structure for you, and it is where you learn most of your lessons in life, so to speak. The cycle of Saturn in your chart is very important, and when your Saturn cycle is occurring, if you know anything about astrology, you know it. You sense it. You can't miss it. It's ever present, and it will operate as intended, and much of what you think you actually have control over in life just will not go necessarily the way you have planned it. Now, whenever I had my Saturn return, I went through an interesting period in my career where I left one firm because they didn't want to pay me the money I wanted and went to work for somebody else. And I didn't really like that place that much, but it was an experience. And the whole time that I was there, the firm that I left was trying to get me back. And they valued my services well enough to warrant that. And what they had to do essentially was wait till the new year occurred and they allotted a new budget. And then when that occurred, they acquired me back. And then at the same time, I had split up with my girlfriend a couple of years before this time, and we had been living together for almost 4 years. And we didn't have a bad break as far as I was concerned, and I won't get into all the details of it, but as far as I was concerned, it was like, okay, what's wrong here, all right? And so at the time that the Saturn return came around, and I was just starting to learn astrology, and I really did not know what exactly was happening at the time. Hold on, I need to cough. At that time, I had met somebody, and had when I say met somebody, I met a female, and I had her over. And while I had her over, well, my ex-girlfriend comes knocking on my apartment door while she's over. And so, you know, I'm ignoring, obviously, my ex-girlfriend. And so anyway, to make a long story short, at a later point, we talked again, and comes to find out she wants me back. And I tell her no for various reasons that I won't get into. But it's just one of those deals. It's and that's mild. Other people have other issues that come up. during your Saturn return, like deaths may occur, et cetera, et cetera. I really started getting into astrology at that time. Now, just to let you know, I've been into astrology since approximately 1988, 89. I got into it right before my Saturn return. And so anyway, we may discuss more on the Saturn return if we have time. If we don't, I'll make it on another show. We're almost at we're a little bit after the hour mark here. Uranus, I'll skip Chiron. It's considered a planetoid again, but it really has to do with healing. Leave it that. I'll just leave it at that. Its cycle is about 51 years, and since I'm 52, I just had my Chiron return a year ago, and that was interesting too. But I won't discuss my personal issue on that. The next one is Uranus. That has to do with change in a different way. It's sudden, surprising, electrifying. Uranus has to deal with computers, anything electronic, anything that has to do with modern technology, more or less. Put it that way. Anything that you have that is electronic would apply to Uranus. It represents freedom from the known. When you have a Uranus transit, Uranus never really creates something that's just totally negative. There's always something positive involved. So in other words, when Uranus comes along and you're experiencing a transit from Uranus in your chart, you will be able to make a transformation in a way that will be freeing you from something that has been hindering you and holding you back. And so what may seem like it at first to be something that is negative, in the end, winds up being positive. You just were not able to see it in that perspective from the very, very beginning. But then once it is passed, you can see how it was that it helped you. Now, the planet after that would be Neptune. Neptune is very nebulous, and it dissolves. And it correlates to the 12th house that I was telling you before about confinement. And confinement is, can be anything from, like, hospitals to mental asylums, insane asylums. Maybe you're confined to the military or you're in jail. Just any sort of a number of things. The biggest thing that Neptune does is that it dissolves. And Neptune always brings with it confusion. You always be in a state of confusion when Neptune is having an effect on you, no matter how much you think you know. No, I don't care how good you are as an astrologer. Neptune will leave you deceived in some way, shape, or form, and you will not be able to see until that transit is over where it is that you were blinded, trying to figure out what in the hell was going on. And in the same certain sense that Uranus does, Neptune typically will dissolve things in a way that will make things better later, but you can't see it when you're in it. Again, you cannot see it at the time that it's going on. And I'll give you a personal experience on Neptune. When Neptune was transiting my natal Saturn, and Saturn, of course, represents structures, so everything that in my life that was some form of a structure, anything I depended on, you know, my vehicle didn't go away, but I had some problems with it. But, you know, I lost a job. And Neptune basically dissolved everything in its path. I moved in with a friend of mine for a little while and stayed with him for about a year until I was able to get things together again and back on my feet. And you don't see it while you're in it. You don't see how it is that necessarily things, the way they came to be that way, or what even caused them to be that way. And even after it's passed, you may still never figure it out. Now we get to the biggie, Pluto. As I mentioned before, Pluto is the strongest planet in the zodiac. Well, Pluto has to deal a lot with death and transformation. Pluto will overpower Saturn. Now, I had hoped to be able to play some audio portions of some videos that were on YouTube, but I was not able to get them loaded in time. Because, see, Pluto right now is transiting Capricorn, and without a background on that, you might not be able to understand And since the show had to take a different direction, I'm not really going to be able to get in that. But Pluto is your strongest planet. It has to do with the ability to deal with power as well. So when you experience a Pluto transit, it's you can't resist it, no matter what. No matter how hard you try, Pluto will win. If something's being forced on you as a change, that change will occur. And you can fight it all you want, and then at some point you're just going to realize that you're just not going to win. And it does not matter what sort of a power struggle that is involved, or what sort of a transformation that you're talking about, or a death, etc. For example, Pluto could conjunct your moon, and that could possibly mean the death of your mother, as the moon typically represents your mother. And again, I haven't discussed the moon yet. So that's just a brief general discussion of the major planets. Now, the moon, it's a little bit different story. That is closest to the Earth, obviously, than anything else, and its cycle is fastest. It goes around the Earth every 29 and a half days. However, the lunation cycle is every 28 days. When I say the lunation cycle, that has to do with the phases of the moon, from new moon to full moon, and all of the different quarters and points that are in between. But it goes through the zodiac around the Earth every 29 and a half days. And so that planet does have to deal with your mother. And it also has to deal with your home. It has to deal with your emotions. And it has to deal with anything that is a domestic situation. So, you know, your health issues, you know, going to get groceries can be combined with Mercury on small transportation, etc. I hope I'm doing okay here on winging this, because, you know, I had to totally take a different direction with this. I originally actually was going to go with this, and then I got to thinking, well, you know, what I really don't want to happen is that I scare people off with getting into the mechanics of this, and I haven't even discussed about whether or not, you know, how astrology works or anything like that. But I'll see how it goes before we're done. But I'm going to take another break here in just a second. But what I really wanted to do, like I was saying, was to whet people's I want to get people's interest up in a way that they might would develop as an immediate interest, because it correlates to what we're doing. You know, if you look at the manifesto that Mike Sledge created, okay, I find that very interesting and on a multiple levels, because if you got a chance to watch Quantum Astrology, and if I would be able to play any of these videos, audio portions of them, and I did get one uploaded. I'm afraid to try and upload while I'm talking. I just know the bandwidth will get screwed up, and then the show will disappear. And I may play this one. The outer planets have a play very. They're like a backdrop to all of the social events that are going on the planet, and their interaction with each other and their cycles will contribute events. Now, what most astrologers don't understand is they don't understand the things that we do. In other words, they don't understand all of the politics involved and all of the people manipulation of events and things that are going on behind the scenes. And what I'm going to do here is I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to take a break, and I'll come back and try to clarify what I was just talking about. So let me pick another song, and hopefully when I hit the button this time it will work right. I've had a little bit of trouble with that, but I think actually I have a slow connection tonight. When I was trying to upload things for tonight's show, I was getting messages saying, do you want to continue? This will slow your computer down. And I rebooted right before I did all this. So, okay, I've got to check here. Hold on just 1 second, please. Okay, reconnect. Kyle sent me a message, try to reconnect during the show, rather during the break. All right, let me go ahead and play a song, and then I will try to reconnect during the break. Hopefully it's not because things are not going right on the receiving end. But anyway, here we go.
Thank you. Okay, I'm back. However, I was not able to reconnect with Skype. It would not let me do it, so I had to call in with the regular phone line. So the rest of the show will be a deteriorated quality of sound on my end. That's just the way it goes for tonight. So anyway, what I was wanting to get into was the issue of how things occur when the cycles of the planets make this little dance routine in the sky. And what I would like to go ahead and do is I was able to get one of these uploaded, and it does have to do with the transit of Pluto into Capricorn. And the reason this is significant, it's on a multiple level. If you remember what I said earlier, how and let me check, by the way. I'm going to look in the chat room. Can somebody tell me if I'm coming through okay? Somebody want to just say, you know, hey, okay, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Okay, nobody's doing anything. Okay, you're way too retarded for that, 67. Laugh out loud. Can somebody respond? Sounds good. Okay, thank you. All right, here we go. Now let me get back to the studio here. The United States chart, as I mentioned before, approximately 1776. It depends on what you want to base it on, whatever year, whether it be the Constitution. Let me say this, for example. When some people want to say the signing of the Declaration of Independence, when that final signature occurred, some will say the moment that this document became public, that should be the time that should be used. But what it everybody's got a different version. However, what we do know is that the United States is a certain age, and it's going to get a Pluto return at some point. And that some point will be occurring sometime in the next 10 years or so. Now, when the United States Revolution occurred, it happened when Pluto was in Capricorn. And it represents transformation that Capricorn cannot resist. So what I want to do here, and I'll get back to this manipulation of events from behind the scene at a later point, is I'm going to go ahead and attempt to play this one clip. Now, this is just the audio portion of a video that was done by an astrologer that I really like on YouTube. And the reason I like him is because he's concise. He speaks slow enough where you can absorb what he's saying. And I think generally he does a good job of his assessments. However, when I tried to comment on his videos with political issues, he didn't like that. And so I can't comment on his videos. So anyway, let me give this a try and see if this button works when I hit it this time, okay? All right. Hopefully we'll see you in about a little over 7 minutes. Come on. Really bad connection here tonight. There we go. Crap. See? This thing keeps jumping around. I hit a button, and then it jumps to the next song. And it won't even play the one that I'm hitting. That's how bad of a connection I've got tonight. Let me try this again. Yeah, come on, it's the very bottom, and every time I hit it, it goes off the screen. There we go. I think there's a little bit of silence before it actually gets going. If it doesn't start, then I will cancel it and just continue talking. It says it's going. I don't hear anything. We'll give it a few more seconds. Okay, well, I think that's a failure. So I don't know whether to try and stop it or just let it keep going, and then if it interrupts me, then let it play. Okay, I'm just going to try to stop it. Okay. Bad luck tonight. Kind of like that song I played earlier. If I didn't have bad luck, I'd have no luck at all. it looks like it's trying to go. I can't make it stop. All right, so anyway, screwed up studio here tonight. We'll just have to try and do another one, and hopefully everything will go better next time. And I'm just going to try and leave all this stuff loaded in here and then continually add to what I want, the rest of the stuff I wanted to add. Okay, lost my train of thought. We won't be able to discuss that tonight then. But this guy made some very good comparisons of events that would be coming up in the future. And part of that is resistance to tyranny. And there's cycles that are involved that come into play over time. And you have, let's say, a half cycle. And then you have a second cycle. And we have just recently moved into the second cycle of this transit of Pluto of 248 years divided into half. And the first one was a built-up of power over the people below you. And this one, the bottom half, represents the cycle of the people regaining power over the people above them. And you should be able to, in certain ways, look at history and see where the people have gone through phases of more power than the rulers did, and then periods where the rulers just had absolute total control over everything. So, anyway, instead of being able to play that song, what I'm going to try and do here, or rather that clip, is that I'm going to try to play another song and try to regroup on finishing this show up. And it looks like we have about 35 minutes left. And so I'm not even sure if that other song that I tried to play was going to work or not. So I'll just try a totally different song. All right. Let's see how this goes. All right. This is just really screwy.
Where is she?
What I thought I'd go ahead and do is this. I want to describe a little bit about some things that I've run into over the course of my being interested in this topic. You know, I got into this approximately, like I said before, about 87, 88. So, that, you know, it's about 25 years I've been doing this. And most of my experience has not been actually doing charts for other people. It's just paying attention to my own. So I just don't have time to do a chart for other people. Unless there's somebody of particular interest, say, you know, a romantic interest or something, you know. I just typically just have no real interest in doing it. Although there might be a point here coming up sometime in my life where I may decide to create a website and start doing it professionally. You can get a free chart from many websites, by the way. If you go to astro.com, that is one. And there are many others out there that you can get at least your chart done for you. There are plenty of books available on the market that you can buy to learn how to interpret these things. And that's really, I didn't really want to have to go through a cookbook show tonight like I've done, because essentially if you really want to look back hard enough, you can find all this stuff in multiple books. However, I will say this, you know, there is no be-all, end-all book out there that you can buy on this topic that will tell you any and everything you want to know. You have to buy books by different authors, and you have to try to synthesize all of their different interpretations. But what I wanted to mention is this. Before I played that song, I was talking about how most astrologers don't really understand a lot of the things that we do because they have not bothered to look. They are like everybody else. They are part of the herd, even though they think they're not. They think they're not because they know astrology. So what they fail to realize is that the people above us who control us and manipulate the events on this planet use astrology against us. Yes, there would be certain things that would be occurring at particular times, and they know this, and they also have advanced astrological knowledge, and they use that against us, and they manipulate these events. You know, all of these events that have been occurring in the Middle East, the so-called Arab Spring, for example, you know, there's obviously a hidden hand that's going on. Now, would these events be occurring anyway? Yes. But would they be going the way the people that's running the planet would want it to be? No. Now, when you try and tell an astrologer this, they look at you with the deer in the headlights look, like you normally get from anybody else that you try to tell about this stuff. And so I've been kicked off of many forums on this topic simply because of trying to interject information that I thought would be beneficial. And so that's just kind of par for the course. And I've been kicked out of many forums for many reasons over the course of time for this same exact reason. So, but anyway, what I wanted to, and another thing I wanted to say here too as well, is that because they don't understand this, you have to start if you want to learn this, you have to start adopting that perspective yourself. And unfortunately, we don't have some of the advanced astrological knowledge that the people that run the planet have. For example, you know, there are 88 constellations out there, major ones, and there's also minor ones. And they have information probably on all of them. And ultimately, most of what we deal with are just the main constellations that are form the zodiac itself, which is the ecliptic, which is, again, the point around the Earth as roughly at the equator that goes between the Tropic of Cancer and Tropic of Capricorn, fluctuates through orbit again. And so anyway, if you look at things from the perspective of with the political eye, you can start to grasp what is going on around you with a little bit more depth. And when you analyze things from what you see by the transits of the outer planets, then that will start to make more sense to you. And if you watch quantum astrology, you'll notice that the man doing the show was discussing that there would be really nothing significant until approximately 2020, I believe is what he said. But that's not necessarily true. And if you'll notice in that show, he was typically dealing with oppositions of planets from each other. he didn't discuss any of the other points that have to do with aspects. He did not discuss squares, except for one instance, and that was World War II. And so if you really want to learn more, I think what I'll need to do is do another show and then try to play some of the video clips that I wanted you to hear that would really hopefully suck you into this subject. Because once you hear somebody who has done a very good analogy of it, and again, there are plenty of people out there who know more about this than I do and are better, far better at presentation than I am. Plus, I do not have the benefit through this format to be able to use visuals to demonstrate what it is that I'm trying to say. And I think we'll be able to go off in a better direction next time. But anyway, what I think I'll go ahead and do is try to give you another example of what astrology can do for you, perhaps on a more personal level. Now, we have about 23 minutes left in this episode, and hopefully what I'm going to do is I'm going to read something to you, and hopefully I can get through it in that time. And what I'm going to read to you is something from a book that I have and has to deal with evolutionary astrology. And I'm going to try and zip through this as best I can. And what I'm going to read to you applies in particular to me personally. So when you hear this, you are hearing something that is about me. And this particular book has 12 sections to it. And it's about Pluto, the most powerful planet, and its location in your chart. And in my chart, Pluto is in the first house. And, again, you won't be able to necessarily relate to this unless you also have this aspect in your chart. But this will indicate to you, again, how this can relate to you on a personal level. And at the same time, you will know a little bit more about me. So, anyway, let's start. Pluto in any angular house or sign shows that a new evolutionary cycle is beginning. This means that a whole evolutionary cycle has come to a close. Pluto in the first house will thus correlate to an individual who will feel that they have a special destiny to fulfill. They will feel this sense of special destiny on a very instinctual basis. This sense is based on the fact that there is a new evolutionary cycle beginning for them. The first tentative steps to develop and actualize this new cycle have begun in the most recent prior lives for these individuals. Since these people have begun a new evolutionary cycle in the very recent past, they will need and gravitate to independence and freedom in this life. These individuals will likely be self-centered and somewhat narcissistic in early life. Primary allegiance and identity is with themselves. They have and will desire freedom and independence to initiate and fulfill any desire or experience they deem necessary, because experience is the vehicle through which they discover or become who and what they are. This emphasized need for freedom and independence is compulsive, because the new evolutionary cycle that they have embarked upon is so instinctual. There is an intense sense of a personal self-discovery that is felt at every moment. In other words, something new could be discovered or realized any time. Because this sense of self-discovery is not conceptually formulated, self-discovery is linked to what is to come. Thus, the sense of a special destiny that is waiting to be discovered demands essential independence and freedom. These individuals must be free enough to pursue whatever experience comes their way in order to realize or discover something about themselves that they did not know before. It is this instinctual attraction to the immediacy of a potential experience that serves as the vehicle through which the sense of a special purpose and self-discovery can be realized. The evolutionary intent has been and is to find out something new and unique about oneself. This evolutionary pressure sets in motion a process of continual becoming that is highly magnified or intensified. The first house Pluto, by the very nature, demand unchecked expression, action, and application. Yet Pluto, its very nature, seeks security through familiarity. Pluto needs perspective and wants to know why prior to an initiation of an action or a desire. When these two processes are linked a natural conflict occurs. On one hand, these individuals naturally gravitate to independence and freedom. They claim the right to be free and do what they must do. On the other hand, they can resist the instinctual impulses to evolve beyond what they are at any moment in time. The result on a cyclic basis is an identity crisis experienced in varying degrees of magnitude. Loss of perspective can occur when these individuals cyclically implode upon themselves. Implosions result when the evolutionary desire and pressure to forever move forward through one experience after another meets the intrinsic resistance of Pluto to secure and maintain that which one already is, familiarity in the known. The identity crisis that occurs is thus based on the simultaneous sense of stagnation, limitation, and restriction in terms of what the individual already is, and the need to eliminate these restrictions by initiating new experiences or actions. The need for new experiences will have the effect of creating insecurity with respect to what the individual already is and how he or she has structured his or her life. Again, these instinctual evolutionary desires to grow, evolve, and move forward do not manifest in well-formulated thoughts, concepts, or ideas about what to do. They simply manifest as an intense instinctual impulse to do something, anything, that will create the necessary movement that allows for a continuation of self-discovery. The natural resistance of Pluto, when linked to the instinctual impulses to change, can result in feelings of inner frustration and anger that can be very intense. Often this anger is projected upon others who are seen as the source of the restriction, stagnation, or problem. In extreme cases, the potential for physical violence exists. And let me stop and say something at this point. What this means is that this is from the base level. Now, once one matures and understands a few things about life in general, this is not necessarily the case anymore. This is just the base desire in, or description of the base entities. Now, the polarity point of Pluto is the seventh house or Libra, because this is in the first house. The evolutionary desire or intent of this sign or house is ignited as the cycles of identity crisis continue and deepen. It is ignited as the loss of perspective creates cycles of inner torment and anger. The evolutionary desire will progressively lead these individuals into relationships with others. The process of self-discovery and the actualization of a special destiny cannot occur by maintaining a primary allegiance to just themselves. The prior life instinctual impulse to maintain freedom and independence promotes a natural loner coming into this life. The vacuum of individual isolation from others that has maintained this prior evolutionary need and impulse will promote the identity crisis because the person has reached an evolutionary limitation that is rooted in themselves. The loss of perspective experienced during the identity crisis will manifest as a desire to initiate relationships with others who can help the individual answer the question, who am I? What am I? By experiencing a personal limitation wherein these equations cannot be answered completely within themselves, the individual must learn to open up to other people. Who am I? What am I? Will be the stated or unstated crises leading to the interaction with others. These individuals will subconsciously attract other people who can have a rather shocking effect upon them. The shock effect can occur through the information, advice, or perspectives given to them by others. The vibrational resonance emanating from their souls attracts those who will help the individual answer these questions. As a result of this natural process, those with Pluto in the first house will be instinctively attracted or repelled by many other people. Often the attractions are linked to a sexual or physical magnetism. Such attractions may or may not be acted upon, depending upon the contributing factors in the person's total nature. Mars may be in Capricorn, for example. In all cases, the basis of an attraction to another will be what I call hypnotic attractions that occur on a very instinctual basis. The individual does not consciously know what the basis of the attraction is. It just is. And, of course, others can be attracted to the individual in the same way. The basis of the hypnotic effect, either way, is a natural vibrational resonance emanating from the soul that creates in each person a feeling that they would learn something about themselves because of the relationship formed to the other. These first house Pluto people naturally draw who can help them fulfill their evolutionary requirements, and others are drawn to them for the same reasons. This process works very instinctually and can be quite fleeting in effect. The time duration of this type of relationship does not matter. That which occurs through the encounter does. Some relationships will be longer lasting than others. Some will be sexualized. Others will not. When these individuals feel the instinctual attraction to another, there is a natural desire to find out what the basis of this attraction is. Frustration can result if existing circumstances in life do not allow them to follow through upon the attraction. These circumstances could involve many things, including involvement with someone else. When these individuals feel instinctively repelled by others, they almost totally deny that person's existence. Yeah, I've done that before. There's plenty of people who just turn me off, and I just put them out of my mind. Sometimes this attraction-repulsion dynamic works in such a way that they feel repelled by the very people they feel attracted to. Because the attraction may directly threaten the existing nature of their reality. Relative to these three basic reactions to the evolutionary and karmic requirements for this life, these individuals can react in three possible ways to attractions they feel toward others and the information coming to them from others. Number one, total rejection of the information or attraction. If the individual feels threatened or attracted by someone else, felt threatened or attracted by someone else, or if they felt another's intentions were suspect. Number two, to take in the information or follow the attraction wholeheartedly if they felt the intentions or motivations of another were sincere, pure, and worthy. Number three, to reject some attractions or information and at other times take in some information and or follow an attraction. As the life unfolds, the first house Pluto individual, me, also come to realize or desire that they want and need to be in an intimate relationship on a sustained basis, not just brief and intense encounters. From the standpoint of evolution, these individuals are literally learning how to be in relationships on an equal basis. They are learning how to give rather than to take, listen rather than to dominate a conversation, learning that they are equals with others, and they are just as important or unimportant as anyone else. By learning how to give to others first, they will learn that their own needs are answered as a result. By learning how to listen, they will know what to give. By listening and giving, they will learn the evolutionary lesson of equality and relativity. Commonly, most of these people experience difficulties in relationships that revolve around confrontations of an emotional, intellectual, or physical nature in the early part of life. Often they must experience the sense of being attacked or attacking, of being misunderstood or misunderstanding another. These experiences occur to trigger the realization of where they and others are coming from, the motivations, intentions, and the basis of the attraction or repulsion. In other cases, intense confrontations may occur through which these individuals experience a sense of not having their needs met by another or of another confronting them because their needs are not met by the first house Pluto individual. The reasons for these types of confrontations are the same: to promote lessons of equality, of giving, of listening, to fulfill another's needs before one's own, to promote the awareness of one's intentions, motivations, and awareness of the changing needs. Again, I'm describing 1/12 of the population here, not just me. Those with the first house Pluto or Pluto in Aries will react in one of three basic ways to an evolutionary intent implied in the above experiences. At different times in life, an individual may experience each one of these reactions. Number one, to seek out relationships in which they are the dominant force, which leads to an unequal situation. They subconsciously attract the situation because it will ultimately guarantee a separation from that relationship. This type of situation maintains the need for freedom but does not meet the individual's evolutionary need. The desire for freedom, thus separation, dictates or creates such a relationship. for the very same reason these individuals may reject or repel relationships altogether. In this case, they fear becoming overly embroiled in another's demands and needs. If they become overly involved in another's needs, they would consider such situations as potential detours that interfere with their own desire to actualize their special destiny. Some individuals in this reaction will pop in and out of relationships as the desire or need dictates. The identity crisis is now whether or not to be in relationships as cycles of personal limitation and stagnation occur. Number two, to seek out relationships in which they are dominated, which will also leads to an unequal situation. This is an extreme reaction to the desire to return to the source and is usually caused by an old karmic pattern that has led to subconscious guilt. The guilt is usually based on the subliminal knowledge of being overly egocentric and very manipulative in other lives. Thus, there is a need to atone for the guilt. This is accomplished by drawing the type of partner who is totally dominating by nature. They dominate by compulsively confronting and pointing out the individual's weakest points or areas. This type of partner presents him or her as the individual who will reconstruct or reformulate the first house Pluto person according to his or her idea of how the individual should be. Number three, and this is the best one, to seek out relationships that contain the potential for equality, with each partner giving and receiving in equal ways, each partner helping the other to understand themselves in open and non-defensive ways, and each partner allowing for independence in the other. Each would value commitment to the other and the relationship. Each partner would desire to define the relationship in new ways and be open enough to let the relationship evolve and change forms as necessary. The evolutionary prescription demands that the individuals learn how to balance their need for freedom and independence with their need for relationships. Rather than falling into an either-or situation, the evolutionary need is to realize that both needs and desires are relevant and necessary. Such individuals must learn that the optimal relationships for them are the with others who encourage, allow for their freedom and independence. They must learn to recognize that this rhythmic need to be alone or to be with someone is not predictable, nor is it known to the individual prior to the instinctual manifestation. The challenge is to follow these opposing rhythms as they present themselves. If this is not done, then loss of perspective, emotional distortion, misidentifying the cause of a problem, and an identity crisis will occur. If these rhythms are followed, then these reactions will be minimized. Because the first house Pluto person is in a new evolutionary cycle, the individualizing impulses manifest on a very instinctual basis. I'm not going to obviously get through this, but I'm going to make an attempt. What I'm going to do is when the show ends, I'm just going to keep reading before I hit end episode and let it be in the archives. However, my point again is that this is the kind of issue, rather the kind of information that you can acquire through astrology. And if you really want to know yourself, and ultimately that's really what this is about. It's not just, know what's going to happen tomorrow. You need to know yourself more than anything else. You can use it for tomorrow, and that's maybe something we can discuss in the future. So anyway, let me go ahead and continue on here. Okay, I kind of lost my spot, but I'll continue. Because the first house Pluto person is a new evolutionary cycle, the individual impulses manifest on a very instinctual basis. They will not know the reason for the desires. Okay, I think I read that. Negatively, this dilemma can create a situation in which the individual adopts someone else's values and beliefs. This inevitably leads to an extreme reaction in which the individual rejects those beliefs at some point. In this reaction, the individual retreats into isolation in order to recover or discover who they are as an individual, independent of what they have been allowed themselves to adopt. Yet because the evolutionary pressure is to be in a relationship, the person ultimately reacts against this isolation and seeks out relationships. This process will keep repeating itself until the person realizes that comparing him or herself to others in this way is not productive. Then the person will seek out relationships with others who listen to and encourage their individual self-discovery as it occurs, rather than forming relationships to others who try to dictate who and what they are or try to make them into something they cannot be. Positively, these first house Pluto people manifest the courage and will to be different, to strike out on their own in a leadership capacity, and to serve as examples to others that they too can assert their right to individuality in the ways they deem necessary. Their lives can serve to motivate others to do what they do in order to realize their own special destinies. Let's utilize an example to extrapolate. Okay, I'm not going to go through that example here. Actually, I probably should, but because it tells a lot. Let's see here. I'll just go ahead and read it. All right, let's utilize an example to illustrate the dynamics and principles. This individual has Pluto conjunct the North Node in Cancer in the first house. Okay, I'll skip part of that. This individual is an American and is in the spiritual evolutionary state, meaning not the herd state. Pluto, that's one good thing. This author recognizes the herd state versus the evolutionary state. And it talks about Pluto conjunct this. In other words, he must maintain primary independence and freedom in order to actualize his special destiny. Yet with Venus squaring Pluto and his nodal axis, there is unfinished business with respect to intimate relationships and the emotional issues therein. He needs to be the person in control of the relationship in order to feel emotionally secure. These symbols also indicate that in prior lives he has inherited positions of social responsibility and power from his father and has had likely been a member of the nobility and the ruling hierarchy. Now, I will interject at this point that I'm a descendant of Robert the Bruce, and that my father's side of my family in Scotland were barons. So in that sense, yeah. His marriage partners were also picked from the noble or ruling class. These arranged marriages did not fulfill his emotional needs, and he seems to have controlled these situations by controlling his emotions. He withheld his emotions through fear of rejection because he did not know how to express them. The emotional dissatisfaction promoted a rebellion, and so he left his constraints of his family and the inherited obligations. He began to travel far and wide, searching for his ideas and truths of transcendent and spiritual nature. His relationships were now formed with teachers and communities of like-minded individuals. He attempted to live his life with respect to intellectual and spiritual ideas and to go it alone. Wandering through many lifetimes in this way, he began to evolve very rapidly on a spiritual level. Yet in his present life, he was destined to confront the unfinished business of intimate relationships in order to recover the skipped steps of the emotional suppressions of many previous lives. His soul needed to do so because further growth at a spiritual level could no longer occur. In this life, he gravitated to all the old patterns mentioned above. He became a spiritual teacher and attracted many followers. He wrote books based on his own experiences upon the spiritual path that encouraged others to take charge of their own lives in a special way. He gave his life totally to these purposes and fulfilled much of his unfinished relationship karma in this way. And yet it was ultimately detached in an impersonal way of doing so. He would not allow others to get close to him on a personal and emotional basis. He became suffocated in the special identity that he had as a spiritual teacher. Others saw him in a special light. This suffocation finally translated into yet another rebellion, wherein he desired and threatened to disassociate himself from his position and his special spiritual name. This identity crisis was founded upon his need to relate with himself and others in a much more personal way, in an emotional way that was based on equality. Then on one of his journeys, he ran into a woman who resonated with his soul on a personal level. He felt he had found his soulmate. She felt the same way in the beginning. They married. He took her back home to live as an example of a new kind of spiritual relationship. She served as a vehicle through which he could recover and feel the emotional dynamics and issues that had been suppressed for so long. Let's see here. Keep going. Got a little note from Kyle there. All right. Yet in the end, she left him. Oh, I'm sorry. They married. He took her back home to live as an example of a new kind of spiritual relationship. She served as a vehicle through which she could recover and feel the emotional dynamics and issues that had been suppressed for so long. Yet in the end, she left him because she was not, in her own evolutionary state, prepared for the role he had carved out for her. This event also occurred as an element of karmic retribution for his own leavings and rebellions during other lifetimes, but it also promoted a positive outcome. The sudden and unannounced leaving forced him to examine in necessary emotional ways where he had been coming from and for what reasons. It promoted a metamorphosis wherein he became emotionally free to express his feelings, moods, and emotions with those he trusted. He would now hug people, hold their hands, and above all, laugh at himself. And by the way, you guys out there, I ain't ever going to hug you, okay? Get it, all right? The suffocation of his old self-imposed image and identity, reinforced by his followers, now gave way to a more human and well-rounded identity and image that allowed him to receive the emotional input and giving of others. He finally wrote a book on how to spiritualize the dynamics of marriage. Once these evolutionary lessons have been learned by the first house Pluto people, then their ability to balance their own legitimate needs with the needs of those around them is unsurpassed. Their evolved ability to listen to another will allow them to give to another exactly what they need. In doing so, they will attract to others who will have the capacity to give to them which they need. They have intrinsic courage and capacity to break new ground into whatever aspect of life that they apply themselves to, and can give courage to others to do the same. Furthermore, these individuals can become aware of the basis and nature of their desires and why and how these desires determine their reality. They can apply this knowledge to others as well and help others become aware of the basis and nature of their own desires. This knowledge can be used to help themselves and others make the right choices as to what desires should be actualized and which ones should not. Common characteristics of the first house Pluto type people are intense individualist, can be very strong-willed, intense, magnetic, bullheaded, defiant against arbitrary authority, courageous, possess inherent leadership abilities, are not given to meaningless conversations, have a penetrating gaze, and I will discuss that one day, and can be hard to get to know deeply. They have very strong physical bodies. So I hope you enjoyed hearing that, because a lot of that pretty much describes me, and that will tell you what astrology can do for you. And hopefully now you see why it is that what I am doing relates to my karmic mission in this lifetime. Thank you for listening, and we'll do a better show next time. Good night.